Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
All right, let's finish up. I hope we'll finish up. There might be some questions left at the end, but let's at least see what we can cover on Noach and his vineyard that we've been studying. So what we have left to deal with is really the beginning of the story that the Torah describes, just to go back into the story a little bit, in verse 18 in front of us, that the sons of Noach who came out from the ark, Shem, Chom, and Yofes. Chom is the father of Canaan, which we've addressed that issue. These were the sons of Noach, and from these the whole world was spread out. Now certainly as we get back into the story, we'll read you through some of the questions that we started. What's the sense that we get when we read that opening verse again describing to us who the three sons of Noah were? And then we have another verse in 19 that says these were the three sons of which we just left it, and from these the whole world was spread out. What message are we getting? What's the focus that the Torah wants us to have?
Well, that Shem was the oldest.
Well,
from these sons, there weren't any other people on the earth.
So, say better. What's the sense we're getting?
The three characters are going to determine the midos of mankind.
Okay, this is it. We are starting fresh. This is a creation of the world anew. The world has been destroyed. And instead of what was in the original creation, all coming from one man, from Adam. Now, how many sons did Adam have?
Two.
And then he had a third, Seth. He also had three sons. One was killed by his brother, Cain, of course, killed Hevel, and then he has a third son. So what originally started from one man, and then from him to three, even though one never actually had children, now we have a recreation of the world. The world is destroyed. Noah exits with his three sons, and then the Torah stresses, and from these three sons, the entire world spread out. So everything was going to come from this family, these three sons, and their father, Noah.
It never occurred to me that this was the beginning of
it. Right, this is the beginning of it. The new world. Right? We can make a cute title out of a book out of it, but that's really what this was. This was a whole new world. It really was. Now, with that set up, what then is the very next verse that we find? Noach, the man of the earth, debased himself and planted a vineyard.
Yes.
Or the other translation of the word vayochel would be Noach, the man of the earth, began and planted a vineyard. And we noted this question when we went through this at first. As we're set up in the story, here we have these four men, Noach and his three sons, exiting the Teva, entering into a whole new world. And what's the first thing that we get? The planting of a vineyard. This is the reshith, the opening, the beginning act that the Torah tells us from the exiting of the table, and then the verses continue that he drinks from the wine, he becomes drunk, and he becomes uncovered, and then the rest of the story, which we spent considerable time with. But let's go back to this opening line. This is the first thing that Noach does. Now, the sages see much in this idea of Vayita Karim, of planting a vineyard. Let's just start, just to get a sense, as we begin to introduce this idea, with the sheets that I gave you. These are two passages from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. For those not familiar with the way that art school does the Gemara, what they do is it reads in English, just they have alternating English and Hebrew phrases. So we'll just read the English phrases as we go through. So the first Gemara says as follows. The opening of the Gemara are verses that allude to the evil effects of wine. The Gemara happens to be having a discussion about the negative impact that wine can have. And the Gemara brings a drasha from our story. Darish Oiver Galilaa, Over the Galilean, expounded as follows. 13 vav prefixes were said in the section of the Torah discussing wine. Meaning if you take a look at the Hebrew side of the sheet that I gave you, the verses, if you'll take a look at the opening verses, just the opening letter of all the verses on the Hebrew side. What do you find? Vav. Starting from Vayechal. Starting from verse 20. Just Vav, 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 Vav. And if you look within all those stories, all the verbs are connected with a Vav, Vayachol, Vayitakarem, Vayesht, Vayishkar, Vayiskol. I'm reading Pasuk 21. Chavbet, Vayar, Vayaged, Vayikach. Just one Vav after another. So the Gemara picks up on the fact that there seems to be this Vav, which means the word and, to connect this whole story. Now the word Vav has another sort of meaning, which is not used seriously in the Torah, but there's like Vay, is a word like saying Oy. Oy vey. Vai, vai is mir, vai. So the Gemara picks up that why are all these vavs, which have this negative connotation to it, in this story over and over and over again? So the Gemara says the 13 vav prefixes that were said, and then the Gemara actually goes through all of the 13 examples of them, which we don't need to, we'll read through them quickly, but we don't really need to spend time on that. Reading through in English, no, the man of the earth debates, and we're not, reading English isn't going to help, because we're just, we're going to read this in English, which we're familiar with. And what's the reason for all this on the very bottom of the passage, before, in the number one? These 13 vavs teach that wine is a source of woe and misfortune. So the Gemara just sort of connects, and this will be our introduction to the story, that which Noach planted, the vineyard, which produces, of course, wine. The Gemara sees that wine is a source of misfortune. Wine is a source of something which can bring evil tidings, so to speak, to the world. And the Torah puts a hint in that, in this story, that Noach, the first thing that he does is plant this wine. Wine also has an ability, of course, to bring joy and to gladden the heart, but it also, overdone, brings misfortune. And in this story, the Gemara sees a hint of that. Let's go on to the second passage. Having quoted a series of verses that discuss Noach's involvement with wine, the Gemara now analyzes one of the verses, which is really our verse right now. Noah, the man of the earth, debased himself and planted a vineyard. Now again, I want to just stress that the Hebrew word of this verse is vayochel. The word vayochel has two meanings to it. And we've been going back and forth because we introduced this way back when, but I just want to go over this again. Vayochel sometimes means lahaschil, to begin, to start. So that the verse would be translated, Vayochel Noach, and Noach began by planting of a vineyard. The word Vayochel also means from the language of Chulin. Chulin is the opposite of Kedusha. Shabbos, what's the opposite of Shabbos? Chol, a weekday. Chulin is that which does not have sanctity. I believe even Chalal is the Hebrew word for space, like a just big void, emptiness. Is just, that's that word. So the word Vayachel Noach, and that's the magnificence of the Torah, in which we use a single word which can have many connotations, means, and that's how I translated it on the English sheet, so I put both in there, he began and he debased himself. So that the sages saw the simple meaning of the verse is that this is what he began to do. And in beginning to do this, he debased himself. In beginning to plant the vineyard, by starting the first act out of the Teva with this vineyard, he has at the same time began and he has debased himself. Let's go on with the second passage. Amar Rav Chisda, Amar Rav Ukva. Chisda said in the name of Rav Ukva, and some say it was Mar Ukva, said in the name of Rav Zakai. The Holy One, blessed is He, said to Noach, 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 should you not have learned to avoid wine from Adam? Whose downfall was caused only by wine. Shem has a comment to Noach. Noach, how could you plant the vineyard? Didn't you learn anything from your forefather Adam? Adam, the first man created, his downfall came about from wine. Don't you think you should have learned and not planted wine? Now, all of you are asking the question, what does wine have to do with Adam? Where do we see wine in this story? Says the Gemara. Now, those of you who are here for the Garden of Eden story, so they know one thing is for sure. What was the fruit not that Adam HaRishon ate from? An apple. What was it? And clear, the Torah just calls it an eight. It was a tree. Says the Gemara. The Gemara explains this statement, that the Gemara now connects the actions of Adam, of drinking wine, back to the actions of his forefather, Adam. Kimanda Amar, this approach of the Gemara is according to the view that states the tree from which Adam ate was a grapevine. an opinion in the sages that the tree, the Eitz Hadas, Tov Vera, that Adam was not permitted to eat from the tree of knowledge, was actually a grapevine. As it was taught in a braisa, the name of Rebbe Meir, the tree from which Adam ate was a grapevine. For there is nothing that brings as much sorrow and wailing upon a person as does wine. So since there can be not as much wailing and sorrow as wine, and wailing and sorrow is certainly what was brought upon mankind through eating of this tree, so Rebbe Meir was of the opinion that the tree was actually a grapevine, and that which Adam ate, gave to his, or Chava ate, and she gave to her husband Adam to eat, were the grapes of the vine. And now that Adam should come out and plant the same thing, Hashem says to Adam, didn't you learn? Didn't you gain anything from witnessing that entire previous episode that Adam Harishon eats the grapes of the vine, and look at the sorrow and the wailing that was imbued into the world at that point, and you didn't learn anything, and you did the same thing? Now, that's, and the Gemara therefore connects those 13 vavs into the story, the vi, the woe, the wine, all comes from that story. Now, parenthetically speaking, until before we go on, the other two opinions of the Gemara I quoted down here in the bottom, Rabbi Yehuda says that it was a stalk of wheat. For an infant does not even know how to say father or mother until it has tasted grain, and since it was the tree of knowledge of Tov and Ra, and knowledge is bound up in kernels of wheat, and until a child's old enough to eat and to gain certain types of food, it doesn't have certain knowledge. Rabbi Yehuda understood that it was a wheat tree, and I gave a whole schmooze on this once between Mincha and Ma'ariv and Yontif. It's a whole long discussion of understanding what's the significance of it being a chita. There's a main problem, which I don't want to get into this now, it's not our topic, but what would you say is the biggest problem with saying that the eight, that Adam ate from the tree that he ate from, was a wheat kernel?
Adam and Chava are fully grown adults. They don't have any digestive problems.
Yes, you're...
But it's a tree. It's
thank you,
wheat.
That right? It's not a tree. That's the fundamental problem that we need to address. Why exactly is... how can Rabbi Yehuda say that it was a wheat tree? And I'll just give you one other just to whet your appetite. We're not talking about this now. The Gemara says that the four times of the year that we're judged, we do sacrifices or offerings in the Beis HaMikdash to correspond to what we're being judged on. So for example, the one that you're all familiar with on Rosh Hashanah, which is the time of judgment for mankind. So the Gemara says, so you blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah that you should be remembered for good, since it's a time of judgment. On Sukkot, when the world is judged for water, so what do we do in the Beis HaMikdash on Sukkot? We pour a water libation. There's a special Nisach HaYayin, the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, the celebrations of Chol HaMoed Sukkot surround the water libation service which takes place during the holiday of Sukkot in the Beis HaMikdash. And why is there a water libation process which takes place specifically on Sukkot? Because Sukkot is the time that we are judged for water. Pesach is the time that we are judged on, I believe it is the produce of the, on grains, and we bring, therefore, the Korban HaOmer, made out of barley, which we bring on Pesach, the second out of Pesach, which we begin the Sfiras HaOmer, because that's when we're judged on, and the trees, I hope I have that, the Peros HaIlon, the trees are judged on Shavuos, so we bring the Shtei HaLechem, the two loaves of bread that our produce should be blessed on Shavuos. And there too we have the same problem of, wait a minute, Shavuos we're judging on trees, and we bring wheat kernels, grain, and bread? What does it do with the trees? I feel like I've said something along with that part is, so that's all ties in together, that when the produce of the world is judged, we bring bread made out of wheat.
Are you going to collect the wheat at Sukkot time?
I don't know. Could be, but we bring it on Shavuos. Okay, in any case, that's all. That's opinion number two, that it was a wheat kernel that Adam ate from. And opinion number three, a little bit further down in the Gemara, is Rabbi Nechemia felt it was a fig tree. For it stands to reason that through the very thing which they, Adam and Eve, disgraced themselves, they were rectified, because the Torah describes that Hashem sewed together fig leaves together to clothe them. So it makes sense that if it was fig leaves which clothed them, it was a fig tree which they had eaten from. But in any case, The opinions of the sages are not an apple, it's not one of the three opinions, it's either a grape, which is what our Gemara is assuming right now, that it was a grapevine, and therefore that's the claim against Noah. How can you possibly have done the same thing that your forefather Adam had done? And the other two opinions, just parenthetically, not for us today, are it was either a wheat stalk or it was a fig tree. Just interesting piece of information as to what was it that Adam ate.
Let me ask him, this starts off with the, it alludes to the evil effects of wine, so how come we use wine for every
Excellent.
Ceremonial thing?
Fabulous question. We'll get to that a little bit later. I'll just start by saying wine has that quality of being on extremes. Wine has the quality of being something which can be raised to a level of bringing joy and in measure, and it also has a danger component to it. But we will get to that, that aspect. That's a very important aspect. In other words, wine is a very powerful tool. Like, you know, things in life, I'm sure I've said this in this forum many times, everything in life is neither good nor bad. It just has a certain measure of power to it. Some things are more powerful than others. The more powerful it gets, it can be used for either greater good or less good. Nuclear energy, good or bad? It's not good or bad. It's powerful. It's very powerful. It can be used for tremendous good, to provide energy for an entire city. It can be used to destroy an entire city. It's just powerful. Fire is a powerful tool. Without fire, the world, we wouldn't be where we are today without fire. Yet fire is very destructive. Same thing with the money. You know, is money good or bad? Neither. Money is just powerful. It's very powerful. It can be used for great good. It can be used for great bad. It can destroy people. It can build people. So some things are less powerful in life. Some things are more powerful. Then if a wine is a very powerful item, wine can bring tremendous good and it can bring tremendous destruction. Therefore, it has to be used appropriately. The sages picked up on another very important phrase in this verse. In verse 20, that you will, there are two important phrases which we'll get to. Let's start with the first one. Vayochel Noach ish ha'adamah vayitakarem. Noach, the man of the earth, began and planted a vineyard. Now there's a phrase in there which sounds very similar to a phrase that we have in the very beginning of the Parsha, but it's a little bit different in a significant way. How do we open up Parshas Noach? I'll start. Ela told us Noach. These are the generations of Noach. Noach. Anyone familiar?
You
should have
him.
Close. You can look in your chumash if you have it in front of you. Opening phrase of Parshas Noach. That's right. So what do we have that's sort of similar but very different? Excellent. Here again, right? What's the phrase in the opening phrase? No, Ela told us Noach. Noach, these are the generations. No, then what do we say? Noach ish tzaddik. Noach was a righteous man. But those are the three phrases, three words together. Noach ish tzaddik. Noach was a man of righteousness. Let's just translate it sort of that way for now. What do we have in our pasuk? Those same three words, but they're a little bit different. Noach ish.
Ish adamah.
Adamah. Noach was a man of the earth. There's a progression, I don't call it a progression or a regression, but what? Where do we start from? How do we define Noach? Ish tzaddik, as a man who is a tzaddik. And how do we call him here? An ish adama, a man of the earth. Is that a step up or a step down for the Torah to have gone from an ish tzaddik to an ish adama? Right? That's a step down. To go from being called by the Torah as an Ish Tzaddik to being an Ish Adamah as a step down. And the sages picked up on that. Like, what happened there? How did we go from being an Ish Tzaddik to an Ish Adamah? So there are a number of statements in the sages. Let's just read the one or two together. First one picks up on this exactly. Mark says, Kevan shenizkak la'adama na'asechulin. Meaning connecting the language of Vayochel, and he began, which also means, and he debased himself. That when he began by planting a vineyard, which made himself into a man of the earth, the sages say, the tchila, he was an ish tzaddik. In the beginning, he was a righteous man, but now that he became an ish adama, that he debased himself, and instead he busies himself with the vineyard of the earth, of planting, he switched from being an ish tzaddik into a Ish Adama, to a man of the earth. The Meshe Chochma, one of the more recent scholars, I believe he was in the 1700s or 1800s, writes as follows, that Moshe Rabbeinu also has a similar two-time description as an ish something. First he's described as an ish as one thing, and then he's later described as an ish as something else. First time we find Moshe described, I'll give you a hint where it is, see if you can remember where it is. He is just fleeing from Mitzrayim. He has just killed an Egyptian and has run to Midian to save his life. And the daughters of Yisro find him, or he finds them, by the well. They run to their father and they say, "We were saved by an Ish Mitzri, by an Egyptian man." We define Moshe, they define him, and they say he's an Ish Mitzri. At the very end of his life, in Parshas Vayelech, at the very end of Vayelech Moshe, we say, 40 years out into the desert, at the end of the story, the day of his death, Vayelech Moshe, Ish HaElokim, the man of God. Medrash says, look what happened. Noach went from being an Ish Tzaddik to an Ish Adama, from a righteous man to a man of the earth. Moshe went from the man of the earth, of an Ish Mitzri, an Egyptian man, to becoming an Ish HaElokim, to a man of God. And the Meshech Chochma writes, there are two ways for a person to be involved in himself, in Avodas Hashem, in his service of Hashem. If he wants to be entirely focused, these are two, obviously, broad stroke types of ways. One, he writes, is miyachid atzmo l'avodoso, so he designates himself for Hashem's service, umizboidin, and he goes off to himself. Can't be bothered, disturbed by the smallness of this world. He's going to be off in a yeshiva, off in a room to himself, and he's going to be focused only on whatever it is that he's doing, and that's what he's going to be doing. That's going to be the way that he will focus on his avodas Hashem. Yeah.
But the whole world is corrupted. The level of iniquity.
Hold on. The other way is to be osek v'tzorchei tzibur, to shoulder the burden of the community on oneself, and to be very much involved in all of their daily needs. The Meshech Chochma writes, logically speaking, which one would we think would grow in their own knowledge and spirituality and spiritual heights more? The one who's off on his own, sitting and studying and contemplating and working on himself, or the one who's busy making shalom between these two people who are fighting over a couple of dollars over in the store? Obviously, it goes without saying, says the Meshech Chochma, we would expect that the one who's off studying would be far greater than the one who's busy dealing with the needs of the people. Which is why he finds it interesting. In fact, he brings a proof that the Gemara says that one of the Tanayim said, Rabbi Yeshua ben Lakish said, he forgot 80 halachas involving certain aspects of a grave in terms of halachas of Tum and Tar, because he was busy with the Tzorchei Tzibur. He wasn't able to review them and he forgot them. So that would be the way we expect it to go. When you're at a yeshiva, you can't possibly be holding and involved and up to date on all the issues, because you're not. You're involved in, you know, people's needs and people's lives. Yet we find Moshe, who was the principal, Osek B'Tzorchei HaTzibur, principal person who was involved in the needs of his community, he transforms himself from a Ish Mitzri to an Ish HaElokim, from an Egyptian man to a godly man. And Noah, who was off by himself, goes from an Ish Tzaddik down to an Ish Adama. And the Meshech Chochma quotes the Medrash and says, because there was a problem with Noach that was held against him, that it wasn't that he was just sitting in a teva, sitting and learning and sitting in a yeshiva. The Medrash says it as follows. Rabos bonos asu chayo ve'atalisa kulana. The pasuk from Eishes Chayo, the very end of Mishle. Rabos bonu, many daughters have tried valiantly or accomplished much, but you raised yourself above all of them. You are higher than all of them. What does that mean, that you are higher on all of them? Medaber b'Moshe, al shenis ala yoser min hakol. Moshe raised himself above all. It's a reference to a person like Moshe. And the Medrash goes a very fascinating discussion. Goes to a bunch of things. And one of the discussions the Medrash quotes is that Noach has a discussion with Moshe. And Noach says to Moshe, "Ani gadol mimcha, I am even greater than you, Moshe. I know that you're the ones who got, went up to Sinai, you gave the Torah to the Jewish people, but I, in my generation, I was greater than you." And what's Noach's proof that he was greater than Moshe even. Shenitzalti midor hamavol, I was saved out of the whole generation. The whole world was destroyed. Pretty good argument. The whole world is destroyed. And Hashem creates the entire world from me. I'm the only one saved from everyone. Amar Moshe, Aninus Alisi, what are we talking about? Moshe says, I'm even higher than you. You were able to save yourself, but you did not have the strength to save the rest of your generation. Avalani, he tells yes, that's me. Not only did I save myself, he tells yes, Dori, Kishinetchaivu Kliyaba Ego. After the sin of the golden calf, when Hashem also wanted to destroy not the whole world, but the entirety of the Jewish people, I not only saved myself, which is what Hashem wanted to do, meaning we were both even. God chose me from amongst the Jewish people and said, forget them. I'm going to destroy them and I will fulfill all my promises through you. And he said the same thing to your generation. Forget them. I will continue the world through you. But you saved yourself and lost your generation. I was not only able to save myself, but I saved my generation as well. And the Gemara says, Mashal Amadov Adoyma, what is this comparable to? To two boats, two ships out at sea. And they both have their own captains. And a storm hits. And one captain is able to spare himself and his ship, and the other captain is only able to save himself, but his ship is lost. To whom will you praise more, says the Medrash? Which captain deserves our accolades? Obviously, goes without saying, the captain who not only saves himself, but saves his ship and all of its contents as well. So says Moshe to Noach, you don't have anything on me, Vatalisal Kulana. Medrash says Moshe is exalted above all because not only was he chosen from his people to be saved, but he then was able to carry all of his people with him, and Noach was not able to do so. So the Gemara sees in this planting, in this verse, one hint of Vayochel Noach Ish Adama, the beginning of the phrase of he debased himself, he started and planted a vineyard. And where is the debasing? In that he has now become from the Yishmitri into a Ish Adama, now, which was a remnant of the fact that he's the only one here is because there's no one else, because he wasn't able to take his generation with him. Now, let's leave that one on the table. Let's go to the last phrase in this verse. What does Noach do? Vayita Karem. The Hebrew is Vayita, he planted. A Karem is a vineyard. Some of the commentators point out he didn't just plant a vine, he planted an entire vineyard, a karen. Now, you might recall, you might not, this is not the first or only planting that we find in the first three parashios of the Chumash. We actually have first four parashios. There are three plantings which take place using this exact same word of vayito, which take place in these parashios. Any guesses?
Kayan?
Nope.
Hashem planted.
Okay, excellent. There's one other. Let's take a look. Let's first go to page 98. If you flip to page 98 towards the bottom of the page where the end of Parsha is Vayera, discussing Avraham. After the alliance with Avimelech at Beersheba, he planted an Eshel in Beersheba. Vayita Eshel b'Beersheba. Exact same phrase. Vayita Eshel. Now, what's the significance of Avraham planting an Eshel? What is an Eshel? So you can just take a look at your note there in verse 33 in the bottom. I hereby give permission. Generally, the rule of this class is you know how to look underneath that line, but here, just for the sake of saving time and getting through. What do they point out? The sages Rav and Shmuel differ exactly what it means. Rav said that it meant that he planted an orchard whose fruits he served to wayfarers, and Shmuel said it meant he planted an inn for lodging, which he maintained a supply of fruit for wayfarers. Either way, what was the purpose of Avram's planting an Eshel?
Yes.
To provide for his guests. And what does an Eshel stand for? Achila, Aleph for Achila. The Shin is for Shatia, to drink. And Lamed for Leviya, to escort to the three basic services that a host should provide for his guests. So he planted an Eshel, he planted an inn of Gemilos Chesed. Achila, Shtia, Leviya, eating, drinking, and then I'll escort you out on your way. So the planting of Avraham is a planting of hospitality. Noach plants, and he plants a vineyard. They both got it from someone else, because there was a planting which took place before them. And that is, as Dina hinted at, that you'll find on page 10. On the bottom of your page, on page, this is the very beginning of the Chumash, beginning of Perek Beis. Vayita Hashem Elokim Gan Be'eden, and Hashem planted Gan Eden, the garden. These three phrases exactly the same. Vayita Hashem Elokim, Vayita Vayita Karem, and Vayita Eshel. Hashem plants a garden in Eden. Noach plants a garden, a vineyard, and Avraham plants an Eshel, representing his hospitality. This was not lost on the sages of the Medrash, that this Vayita, this planting, weaves its way through these three stories. And the Medrash says, Vayita Gimel Bimisar, we find three, putting them all together, that the Netiya Darshu Rabbi Sein of the Chazal Darshan may heichan lokach Noach hanetia. Where did Noach get this vineyard from? Migan Eden. V'chein Avraham lokach ha'ishol migan Eden. Noach and Avraham took their roots of what to do from Hashem's Gan Eden. The same way that Hashem planted in Gan Eden a place for mankind, Noach exits the Teva in the beginning of the new world. And he takes something, but what does he take? Takes a vineyard from Gan Eden, that idea, and plants it as his first act. Avraham took from Gan Eden something totally different. Avraham takes his Eshel tree, the tree from which he'll provide for his wayfarers. Rashi already comments on our story of Noach, and what's the problem with what Noach did in planting this vineyard. Rashi says on this pasuk, Shehayelo laso tchilo b'netia acheres, he should have started with a different type of planting. Meaning, you need wine, wasn't wrong, but that's not where you start. And this was the first thing that Noach does, coming out of the teva, is planting this vineyard. On this nekuda, on this one point, I just want to share with you a thought that my Rosh Hashiva, Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldbach, was Rosh Hashiva in Karen B'Yavna, the vineyard of Yavna. No pun intended, that's just the name of the yeshiva. So he used to say that there's something significant about a start, about the reishis, the beginning of something. And it's more significant than just any other part of the process. And he used to bring a story that's quoted in the Talmud Yerushalmi, in the Jerusalem Talmud. The Gemara there talks about the character of Acher, he who was known as Acher, Elisha ben Avuya. Elisha ben Avuya was called Acher, someone else. They didn't even call him by name. He was one of the great sages of the Talmud who left Torah Judaism. Didn't believe in the validity of the oral law. And the Gemara has many discussions about him and his episodes of this great sage who knew all of these deep secrets and hidden esoteric meanings of the Torah, and then something happened and he left. We're not going to get into all that now, but the Gemara does say as follows. The Gemara starts in the Yerushalmi quoting a verse, Tov Achris Dover Merishiso, and the Gemara wants to read this verse, Tov Achris Dover, that the end, which literally the most simple meaning of the pasuk would be, the end of something is better than its beginning, would be the simple meaning. The Gemara Dashan does not know how to read the pasuk. It's Tov Achris Dover, when will something be good in the end? When it's Tov Merishiso, when it's good in its beginning. That the beginning has to be good to end up with something good as well. If the seed isn't good that you plant, you will not have a healthy tree. You cannot have good, ripe, nutritious fruits if the seed from which it was planted weren't healthy seeds. So Gemara tells the story of Acher's father, this Elisha ben Avuya, who eventually, when he grows up and he becomes a great sage, he leaves Torah Judaism. The Gemara tells the story about his father, whose name was Avuya. And he says his father was one of the Gedolei Yerushalayim, one of the greatest sages in Jerusalem at the time. And at the day that he made the Bris Milah for Elisha ben Avuya, he gathered together all the sages of Yerushalayim to come and to celebrate the birth of his son as he was on his day of the Bris. Hoshivam beveis echad, he put them all in a certain place. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yoshua, while everybody was eating and drinking and schmoozing, Rabbi Eliezer says to Rabbi Yeshua, two of the sages who were invited as guests to the Bris Milah, they said, listen, everybody's busy with stuff. Nasuk anu v'didon, let's do our thing. And what's our thing? Our thing is Limud HaTorah, the study of Torah. So while everybody's sitting and drinking at the Bris, they went off into a corner to study together. Yashru v'nis asku v'divrei Torah, they went off and they sat and they were toiling and learning. From Torah to Nevi'im to Ksuvim, all the different aspects of Torah. V'yardo eish min ha-shamayim ve'hikifo. So when a heavenly fire comes down from heaven and encircles them as they are studying in the fire of Torah. So the Gemara records that Avuya said, "In kachi koicha shel Torah." If that's the power of Torah, looking at these two sages sitting and studying, that a heavenly fire descends and surrounds them, if such is the power of Torah, in this kaimli aben hazeh le Torah ani mafrish, if my son will grow and survive his infancy and he will grow up, I will send him off to the Beis Medrash to become a sage and student of the Torah. The Gemara concludes ulefi shelo haisa kavanaso l'shem shemayim, since my father's intention was not for the sake of heaven. It was a little bit of, look at the kavod, look at the honor, look at the greatness of these sages, and I want my children to be one of them. Therefore the Torah didn't last, it didn't stay, it didn't stick, because the opening wasn't done for the sake of the greatness of Torah. But look at these great people who are merited the heavenly I want my son to be like them. So the Gemara sees it wasn't entirely the Shem Shemayim. It wasn't for the sake of heaven. It wasn't for the right reasons. It was a little bit of the aspect of the kavod, the honor that they have as the great leaders of Jerusalem, that he wanted his son to be amongst them. And therefore the Gemara says, from there he became a great sage, but it never lasted. It didn't stick. And eventually it goes off and he leaves the fold of traditional Torah Judaism. And there's an idea that the Rosh Hashiva used to speak about all the time, which you mentioned, the simple concept of the seed, that everything in the end, the roots are, everything in the end, the product, is based on the significance and the nature of the seed in the beginning. And when you begin an endeavor, the way that you begin that endeavor will always be the way that it will eventually play itself out and leave its fruits in the way that it's done. And for Noach to come out of the Teva, looking out in this whole wide new world, and it's just these eight human beings that exist, and the first thing that we find is wine, is planting a vineyard. So as we mentioned, wine has an aspect of simcha, it has an aspect of joy, but there's a great danger. Nothing brings sorrow and wailing to the world like wine. Wine has to be used very appropriately in the right time and the right place. And we use it for Dvar Meshubi Kedusha. We use it for when we want to exalt certain things, we want to make them into something else. There's no question about that, that we do. But that can't be the first thing that you do when you come out, because you plant something which requires that type of care and is so susceptible to being misused. Because if that's the first thing that can happen, it can be left, it can be led astray. And therefore the Rosh Hashiva used to write, didn't you learn from Adam HaRishon? Didn't you learn of the dangers of wine, that this is the first thing that you do? Look what happened. You planted it and you got drunk. There are dangers to wine. It's something which has that ability, and therefore to start with that and to have this ability, therefore he quotes the Medrash, in the same way, Vayita Hashem Elokim gan be'eden mikedem, Hashem planted a vineyard, connecting all the vayitas, all the plantings of the world. Lomahu matzkir shemole Hashem Elokim, that Hashem, the name, is the full name of Hashem in the planting of Gan Eden. Shemitchilas briyasa hitzricha kivun. In the beginning of the creation, it needs intention. It needs kivun. It needs to be deliberate in the way that you do it. And so for the first thing for Noach to plant the vineyard, which allows the possibility of getting drunk, allows a person losing his mind, right? That's why we get drunk on Purim. On Purim we say, we don't have our mom, we're only here because of you, Hashem. You saved us, you provided for us, and therefore we take away our own seichel, our own knowledge. But that's what the wine has the ability to do. So to start with that was part of his problem. So why did he do it? Now this, as much as I've been trying, there are a couple of opinions in the Gemara, or in the Medrash, that I've seen interpreted in various ways, and I'm just... At the end of the day, so why does he start with a vineyard? So there are a couple of different approaches, which most of which that I've seen, all focus, I've heard now three different approaches, they all focus on the same thing, taking different angles. What was the command that Hashem gives to Noah and his sons as they leave the Teva? Yes, peru or vu. They need to be fruitful and multiply and repopulate the world. And Noah has a problem. Noah has just witnessed the destruction of the world. He's a human being living. Now, whether or not we have complaints against him, as the sages do, that you saved yourself but not your generation, and Moshe can say, my level is greater than yours because I saved my ship and you didn't. But at the end of the day, when that captain swims to shore, and he now is saved, and he's pulled out of the water, and he comes to, what does he have on his shoulders?
Survivor guilt?
My ship was lost. Not just survivor guilt. Survivor guilt is when randomly you were chosen and nobody else was, and you can't explain it. But what if you're the captain of the ship and you failed in your task to save them, not because you were randomly chosen as survivor guilt, but you were responsible for them as the sages held them responsible, and he didn't have the koach to do it. And sages say, that's the language. Ein b'cha koach lahatzil darcha. You didn't have it. It's called the May Noach. The Navi calls it the flood of Noach. He's responsible for it. What does that captain feel? The pain of look at the world destroyed. And now the commandment of repopulate it. Start again after all that destruction and all that loss and all that suffering. And I should start it again. So there are various approaches. Whether or that I'm going to mix and match, which is not fair, and I don't want to do that because I don't have it clear yet. I just don't, as to whether or not it was a matter of getting drunk to be able to emotionally go through with the process of being able to have children again, to sort of create the impact, not drunk in the sense of getting like totally, but like to use wine to allow himself to cope with the destruction and the pain and the suffering, and be able to then move forward in being able to procreate and bring about the next generation. Which, that approach, by the way, that approach would fit. You remember there was another approach in the sages that we saw, that it was Ham, the actual son of Canaan, excuse me, the son of Ham, who saw and told his parents, told his father, because Ham was the one who was going to inherit all that, and he was one of the grandchildren who saw Noach getting drunk and realized, or as we said, why did Ham, let me clarify that, why did Ham actually take away Noach's ability to have children, and why does he take the opportunity of Noach being drunk to do so? I remember, so the Medrash, the sages say that, right, that he removed Noach's ability ever to have children again. Well, why is Noach getting drunk? Well, one of the possibilities of Noach getting drunk was he needed to be able to do that in order to have children. When Ham sees his father getting drunk, he realizes that that's what Noach is about to do, and that will only cut into his inheritance. As the sages said, he said, the first man in the world only had two sons, and they weren't able to get along in dividing up the inheritance. We already have three, and now Noach wants to have more? How did he know that Noach wanted to have more children? Because he was getting himself drunk in terms of being able to go forward and produce this, be able to do that, be able to have more children, given all the destruction and the pain and suffering that he already witnessed. That was all part of that, and that's why Ham stepped in to be able to prevent that. The other approach that goes in is also part of the this I don't really have a grasp on. The whole idea, it goes back to the Eitz Hadas, really. In other words, the Eitz Hadas represented the destruction of the purity of mankind. As we focused a lot on the story of Gan Eden, the concept of nakedness was throughout that story. The opening of that story was that man and woman were naked, and they were not ashamed. And then they eat, and the first thing that happens is they realize that they're naked. And then they hide, and Adam says to God, I'm hiding because I was afraid because I was naked. He doesn't say I was afraid because I sinned, I'm afraid because I was naked. And the snake is Arum, is sneaky, but Arum literally means naked. It just appeared everywhere. And there's a whole concept of the sexuality and the fear and the power that all comes about through that story. So there's another approach in the sages which is beyond my understanding, that in the same way as the first tree was this vineyard, and the eating from that impacted man and woman forever, and the requirement to be clothed and their inability to be naked and all that went into that, that Noah actually planted the vineyard to remedy that, to recreate the vineyard and to be able to eat of it and procreate in a pure way, in the way that it was supposed to have been back in Gan Eden. And Ham defiled him in the same way that the snake defiled Adam and Eve back in the garden. It was a replay of that story, but this is already much deeper than I have a grasp on. I just want to share with you some of the threads that the sages pick up on as to why the vineyard and how it connects back to Gan Eden and to Ham and his inability to have children after that. There's a lot there, more than I am capable of understanding. But in summary of the story, what we find here in these small, short 12 verses is quite a story of, just in summary, a little bit of what we covered, of this idea that following the destruction, the first thing that Noach does is plant this vineyard. The sages saw that, a language of chulin, of the debasing of himself, of this should be the first thing that he does. God plants a Gan Eden, Avraham plants a place for hospitality, Noach plants a vineyard, gets himself drunk, his son Ham comes in, makes fun, removes his ability to have children from him. His two sons, Shem and Yefes, led by Shem, cover him. Shem is therefore given the blessing of Tzitzis. He's given the blessing that God will dwell in his tents. Yefes is granted beauty, and only in the tents of Shem, as we learned, he's granted the Greek language, the pinnacle of their beauty. The Sefer Torah can be written in Greek. And he's subservient to Shem because he was subservient in the act. He's given the mitzvah of kvura, of burial, which honors the body but not the soul after one's death, because he just was led into the action by his body, but his mind was not engaged, and therefore his body is honored with burial, which is what Shem is, which is what Yefes is given. And Ham is cursed with servitude. Ham, who debased his father, will be debased by his brothers and forced to serve them. He, through his generations of Canaan, who specifically took the brunt of that curse, either because he was his only son at the time, or because he was the one who actually saw his father, his grandfather first, and told all the others. And that was that's the aspects of the story which we have covered on some level. Complex story, which I can't even pretend that we covered all the details of it, but the complex story is to that's what we got. Yeah.
Beautiful. I'm confused. When you were talking about that he planted the vineyard, what do the sages suggest that maybe he should have planted instead of the vineyard?
Mm-hmm. Something for tikkun. The language of the sages, I'll share with you, it's an excellent mm-hmm. question. The language was should have planted something of takana, either to fix something, to improve something. Like, he has to plant, he has to, but like, why would you start with wine as opposed to maybe like something more of a staple as opposed to wine? That's what it sounds like. Alright, so from the Ish Tzadik to the Ish Adama. And at the end of the story, as we mentioned, Noach dies, and we don't hear from him again. This is his last act. His first act out at the tape is planting his vineyard, the curses and blessings that he gives, and then we move on. Okay, we will move on as well.
That was beautiful, Rabbi.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.